Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 10th of September 2018. I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn, discussing the world of sports and pop culture. Right now, we are live here on my YouTube channel. This podcast will be also we'll put on Blog Talk Radio as well sometime, either tomorrow morning, early afternoon. Busy weekend of sports and pop culture. A lot of going on from both venues. We're gonna begin with the NFL. Right now, Jets down 7-0 to Detroit. Welcome to the NFL. Sam Darnold throwing a pick six. You never throw late and over the middle. That's what he did on his first. Or late and across your body. The pass wasn't over the middle, but the pass was late and across his body as Detroit returned it for pick six. So tough spot for a rookie quarterback on the road in a dome. Monday Night Football. We'll see if he responds. How well he bounces back. But right now, Jets are down 7-0 to the Detroit Lions. And as we cap off, as the NFL has this annual traditional doubleheader opening weekend, opening Monday night. This game will be followed by, of course, Raiders and Rams, which will close out this week one of the NFL, which was a pretty good NFL weekend. Sunday, you had a number of close games, no great games. You had a wild shootout in New Orleans with New Orleans and Tampa Bay with basically the Ryan Fitzpatrick show. Ryan Fitzpatrick just going berserk down in New Orleans, but really some okay football, even though there were a number of close games. I don't, have high expectations for week one, because what happens is most of these guys are out of shape for the most part. They're not out of shape, but they're just not, the condition is not there. You see a lot of penalties, a lot of sloppy play, and that's what you got. I felt like that's what you got in week one. On Sunday, of course, began even last Thursday with the Eagles and Falcons. And again, if I'm Atlanta Falcons, I'll be looking for a new offensive coordinator. That team has far as much talent to be only putting up 12 points against anybody. I know the Eagles' defense is very good, one of the best pass rushes in the National Football League. But Atlanta should be able to put minimum 21 to 24 points on anybody. Doesn't matter who. So again, same deal with the Atlanta Falcons. Able to go up and down the field until they get to the red zone inside the 20-yard line, and they struggle in the red zone with scoring touchdowns and having to set up a field goal. So that has not changed. Again, the Eagles' pass rush is still one of the best pass rushes in football. I think Wentz probably will be back this week. I'd be surprised if Wentz isn't back this week. So the Eagles are, still one of the teams to beat in the NFC, which is absolutely a loaded NFC. Yesterday, a number of close games. To me, the biggest disappointment, there were two major disappointments. Number one, I don't know, what happened to New Orleans to allow Tampa Bay to come into your building and put 48 points with no Jameis Winston, your home opener. So I can, again, that's one of those performances that you just cannot explain. You cannot explain a performance like that, to be honest with you. That's why week one can be considered to be unpredictable, because you just can't, I never would have thought in a million years that Tampa Bay can go into New Orleans and put 48 on the board, and Ryan Fitzpatrick would go in there and basically just light up the New Orleans defense, which was actually good last year. New Orleans had a above average defense, had a legit top 10 defense last year. But again, it's week one. I'm not one to never overreact to week one in the NFL. again, it's still hot with the weather. Good guys with conditioning. The conditioning is not all the way there with a lot of these players. None of the big time players hardly play in the preseason. The Rams don't play any of their guys in the preseason, so conditioning does become a factor. So that was disappointment number one. The other major disappointment had to be at Lambeau Field with the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears came into Green Bay and everything was perfect for a half. I mean, you go out there, you dominate the first half. Khalil Mack is out there just, you know, running amok. You know, the first player since 1982 to record a sack, touchdown, forced fumble, and also recover a fumble in a half. Again, going back to 1982, he was dominating. The Bear defensive line was dominating the Packer offensive line. Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, and you think, again, nothing could go. You couldn't have a better half. That was tailor-made for Chicago. You think you're going to go in there, not have to deal with Rodgers, and then go in there in the division and win, have a big road win to kick off the season. And lo and behold, Aaron Rodgers comes out second half, well, late third quarter, and just takes over the game. Three touchdowns in the second half, three touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and the Bears come up short 24-23. Again, I don't overreact to week one, but that is a devastating loss for week one if you're a Chicago Bears. Because you're thinking, first of all, you're probably thinking that Aaron Rodgers is not even going to re-enter the game. That's number one. So you're probably thinking that, hey, we got the, you know, that you're probably surprised. And I was a little bit surprised that Aaron Rodgers, that they let Rodgers back in the game, considering, you know, they're down at one point 20-0. They were down at halftime. I think they were down 17-0. Yeah, it was 17-0 at halftime. So I did not believe that they would let Aaron Rodgers back in the game. The Bears were running the ball well. The pass rush was there. They had everything going for them. Second half, you saw the Green Bay speed up, go into a little bit of hurry up. They slowed down the pass rush. You want to say the Bears' defensive line got tired. Khalil Mack was on a snap count, but he was not going to play, you know, the entire game. He was on a snap count. The Bears' secondary, there were some blown coverages. You know, you got guys catching, you know, 20-yard passes and turning them into like 75-yard touchdowns. That should never happen. And again, the Bears allowed the Packers to escape with a 24-23 win. That is just a brutal loss for the Chicago Bears, who played a near perfect first half but could not close the deal. Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, again, please tell me something that I don't know in terms of how great Aaron Rodgers is. I mean, they made this out to be. I mean, Willis Reed, they made this out to be like, you know, like the guy could walk on water. I mean, listen, he was hurt. There's no question that he was hurt, that he was banged up, the knee, you know, but he's going to play next week. He couldn't all the way plant on his throws. But again, the guy, you know, he's the best player, and he's not only the best quarterback, he's the best player in the NFL. He's a guy who we come to expect to do things that you know, 99% of guys who have ever played the game cannot do from that position. So there's nothing that I doubt that Aaron Rodgers can do that we don't come to expect him to do in terms of performance. Again, I was surprised that he re-entered the game. That's where I was surprised. But he came in, made the necessary made throws, did not again was the beneficiary of not having not dealing with a. Of not dealing with a pass rush in the second half, because the Bear defensive line dominated the Packer offensive line in the first half. I mean, it wasn't even close. Just absolutely just pushed them around, pushed them all over the field. And the Packers have an above average offensive line. Packers have a legit top five, top seven offensive lines. No question, no two ways about it. But they were dominated in the first half by the Chicago Bears, and but again, second half conditioning might have played a role with that. Again, adjustments, of course. I didn't, they sped up the pace. Green Bay sped up the pace, and the Bears could not keep up. And the Bears, again, come on the wrong side of a 24-23 game, which is a key game. You know, anytime divisional, I don't care if it's opening weekend or not. Divisional games are always big games. Listen, I think the Bears are much improved team. That defense is a legit defense. They have a lot of talent on that defense. Once those guys get in shape, as far as Khalil Mack gets in game shape and Roquan Smith and those guys, getting game shape, which will not take long, as you would think, as the season moves along. But they have legit top 10 defense. Trubisky was okay. He wasn't great. He was okay. Made a couple plays. Made a couple third down plays with his legs and he was okay. I mean, I'm not going to go. I'm not. The jury's still out on Trubisky. Can he be a franchise quarterback? Can they be the Bears' future quarterback? I'm not willing to say that he is, but he was pretty good in the game for the most part. They have a good running game. I'm not in love with the receivers from the Bears. I'm not. The offense is okay. They're going to be carried by their defense. Their defense will be able to keep them in most games. That's their pass rush is legit. That is a legit top flight pass rush. That pass rush alone will be able to keep them in a lot of games. So we'll see what happens. I thought the Bears. Foresee the Bears being a major contender as far as the conference is. I think the Bears are a team that is going to give a lot of people some problems. I think the Bears will be in a lot of close games. Their defense is very good, but they're not a playoff team in the NFC. There's no way. NFC is too deep. The division is too good. I mean, you have a division of, with Green Bay, Minnesota. Detroit is not bad. Detroit is decent. Not great, but decent. So you have a division that's one of the top divisions in the conference. So good Sunday night game for the most part. Rough day for some quarterbacks. In particular, Deshaun Watson, Ben Roethlisberger, Dak Prescott, as the Jets almost returned a punt here. Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, even Cam wasn't great. The Peterman quarterback from Buffalo was awful. So a rough day for the most. Eli wasn't good. Rough day for a few quarterbacks around the league. Right now it seems like based on yesterday that maybe the defenses were a little bit ahead of the offenses. Pittsburgh, Cleveland almost snapped their losing streak where they haven't won a game since 2016. They probably easily could have won that game. Pittsburgh blows a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter, so that's a bad, especially as a bad tie. That's a bad tie for Pittsburgh. Cleveland gets a field goal blocked in overtime, but that's this is a bad tie for Pittsburgh to be up 21-7 in the fourth quarter and not find a way to win that game. James Conner had a big game for Pittsburgh. Le'Veon Bell missed his first game, $850,000. I don't know how long he'll be out. He will not sit out the whole season. I don't anticipate that. I anticipate that he will sit out enough to accrue the majority of his salary. He will not sit out past 10 games. So we'll see what happens with that. But overall, a okay week one. We had a wild game with in terms of weather delays with Miami and Tennessee. Again, that took about 12 hours. We had a number of weather delays, lightning. Game had to start and stop. Case Keenum played it. Case Keenum had an up and down debut for Denver. I thought Kirk Cousins for Minnesota was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay. But again, Minnesota roster is a loaded roster. Running backs, defensive players, good offensive line. That is a loaded Minnesota team. Garoppolo suffers his first loss as a professional. He came into that game, came into game 7-0. He had a rough day against a great, and I mean great, Minnesota defense that was one of the best defenses in the league last year. But you know, San Francisco is going. I think San Francisco is going to be much improved. Again, on the road in Minnesota, that is a rough way to start your season. That defense is going to harass a lot of quarterbacks. So overall, close games, rough day for quarterbacks. Garoppolo, Watson, Ben Roethlisberger, Dak, Cam, Eli. So a rough day for the most part for the quarterbacks. Locally, as far as the DMV goes, Baltimore just ran over Buffalo 47-3. And the Washington football team was able to take care of business in Arizona 24-6. Impressive performance by Washington. Over 182 yards rushing. They ran the ball. They controlled the clock. They completely shut down Arizona's offense, controlled David Johnson for the most part. Alex Smith played relatively well, did not turn over the football, which he never does. And Washington was able to reestablish the offensive line with their running game. Nice day for Adrian Peterson. And I think, Washington's gonna have to go not so much running back by committee, but they're gonna have to watch how many carries Adrian Peterson gets. They are deep enough at the running back position to me, to where they don't have to put a lot of wear and tear on Adrian Peterson. So it's going to be interesting to see how they manage that over the course of the season. So opening week almost in the books right now. Detroit is still on top of the Jets, 7-0. And you have the nightcap with the Los Angeles Rams, and the Oakland Raiders, which will cap off a week one of NFL football. So it'll be Los Angeles at Oakland that will cap off week one of the opening week of football. You have some good games next week. As far as teams that are panicking after week one, I can only imagine what it's like in Dallas after watching Dak Prescott's performance. Remember, though, Carolina is a top defense. They have another great defensive line, some good players at all levels with that defense. But still, 8 points. I mean, Dallas couldn't do anything against Carolina. Dallas offensive line is banged up as right now. No Travis Frederick. That's a big loss. So we'll see once Dallas gets healthy on the offensive line, they can get it going. Big game next week with the Giants and Cowboys, both at 0-1. You'll have Washington will be hosting the Indianapolis Colts. Andrew Luck, welcome back to him. He was back and again suffered a loss to Cincinnati Bengals. But again, typical Bengals, typical Colts, just not knowing how to use Luck. Luck last night, yesterday, threw 53 times. That is way too many times for Andrew Luck to be throwing the football. I mean, that's why you have to try to at least have a semblance of a running game. You can't have a guy throw the football 53 times. He should not have to throw a ball that many times. So, again, Indianapolis getting him back, but again, him not being used in the correct way. Too many passes, in my opinion, in terms of for Andrew Luck. So that's the NFL in a nutshell. Over the course of from Thursday to Sunday, of course, hovering over the NFL, you have the Colin Kaepernick Nike ad, which debuted on Thursday night. As of right now, Nike sales since this came out have increased by 31%. So the bottom line is, for all the 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds who are boycotting Nikes, Nike is a young person's, young people wear Nike. Nike was made for young people. Young people wear Nike. So I was not surprised. I'm not surprised or shocked by the least bit that Nike, more people are going to start buying Nike once this ad came out, once it's all once this ad came out with Colin Kaepernick. Listen, I love, I mean, I'm going to tell you one thing. I love all the negative attention that has been given to Colin Kaepernick over this. I think that America is uncomfortable for the most part with this, and I love it because, you know, when you're making a statement, when you're standing up for something you believe in, everybody is not going to agree with it, and it is going to make people uncomfortable. And that's what Colin Kaepernick has done. He stood his ground with this. He has not wavered, not one iota. And you have to respect him for that. He's not begging to get back in the NFL. The purpose that he has, the cause that he has, is much bigger than playing football. And right now, again, Colin Kaepernick is going to go down when it's all said and done as one of the, you know, premier figures of the beginning of the 21st century with this. He's going to go, there are Colin Kaepernick posters, Colin Kaepernick, the kneel with the afro. It's going to be a legendary logo, the apparel, the shirts, the Colin Kaepernick shirts, all that stuff is going to go through the roof. And again, all the negative attention, all the hate towards Colin Kaepernick, it only fuels the fire of what he's doing. That's all it does. So, I love it, per se. I love the Nike ad. I don't care what Nike's agenda is, to be honest with you, because this is beyond Nike. Nike's a pawn in all of this. Nike is not, Nike is, they jumped, you can say what you want about Nike. They are absolutely, they're not. Nike is a pawn in big picture, is a small part of this whole thing with Colin Kaepernick and everything that's going on with this ordeal. You can criticize Nike and say they had their own agenda. And listen, Nike doesn't need any more money. So this wasn't about Nike wanting to generate more revenue. I don't believe it. I think Nike is last time I checked, I think Nike's doing pretty well. So I have no problem with what Nike has done. If you want to say Nike's trying to appease other athletes, which I thought that they are with them, whether it's LeBron James or Serena Williams, then okay, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, as the Jets have just scored the two and soon to tie the game against Detroit late in the first quarter. That's fine. But I have no problem with Nike. And again, you have a mayor in New Orleans banning recreation centers from having Nike product, from Nike apparel, or all that does is fuel more fire and make for 18 to 40 year olds, 18 to 35 year olds go out and buy more Nike products. That's all it does. Like you, and for all that burning stuff, you notice what was being burned. You didn't see people burning Jordans or Air Force One. They were burning socks and towels and little Ricky Deacon stuff like that. You're not seeing people burning real, sixes or threes. So, I think this is, this thing has gone to another level with Colin Kaepernick. I did not check the NFL ratings today, so I'll be curious to find out what the ratings were like. Yes, were like after week one versus week one in prior in the past in 2017, 2016, but all the hate, everything that you can say what you want, whether you agree or disagree with Colin Kaepernick, this issue is here and it's here to stay. And it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So this is something the NFL is going to have to deal with. I don't know how they're going to go about dealing with it, but this is something that the NFL is going to be dealing with for the better part of the 2018 season. 42 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Again, like I said, it was a busy weekend in the world of sports and pop culture. We're going to address the pop culture aspect of it in regards to Nicki Minaj and Cardi B. Of course, Friday night, they were at a fashion event in New York, and where Cardi B apparently approached Nicki Minaj about some alleged things that were said via Instagram and Twitter, social media. Probably was a buildup of things that have been going some back and forth, subliminal rhymes that, you know, that have been going back and forth between the two of them. The bottom line is this, and I don't even want to get into she said versus she said, and I'm not getting to an investigation of where this started. They don't like each other, okay? You have two artists, female artists, who are at the top of the rap game as far as female rap, as far as women. They're at the top of the game. Nicki Minaj has been at the top of the game for almost, for the better part of five to, close to a decade. Cardi B came in off reality television, hustled her way, was an ex-stripper, and now she has the heavyweight championship. She has the heavyweight championship belt of female rap, period. Period. So you have two people that don't like each other, and there's nothing wrong with that. So what I want to see is bars on top of bars on top of bars on top of bars. I don't care about the back and forth. Nicki Minaj came on her show, her little Queen Bee radio show with Funkmaster Flex today, and basically said she said that Cardi B's made her career off payola and sympathy, whatever. I don't care about that stuff. And, she was in bad, mortified by what happened and so on and so on. None of that matters. That back and forth, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is bars. Because the essence of hip hop culture, you don't like somebody, fellow, another rapper, you put it to wax. This is why I don't like you. Boom, 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 and you hit them with the bars. So out of all this, I don't want to hear any more back and forth. I want to hear any more Instagram, Twitter, subliminal BS. I want bars. That's all I want. I want bars. Because it's clear that, now let's cut through all the BS as far as, well, we're cordial, we don't have any problem with each other. No. Now it's out in the open. You clearly don't like each other, and that's fine. It's not, everybody's not meant to like each other. That's not real life. So we'll see what happens with it. This is something that's not going away anytime soon. Again, as far as hip hop culture goes, people at the top are supposed to go at each other. So that's nature. That is how it goes in hip hop, for the most part, or how it used to go. This shouldn't be any different. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this turns out. What albums this produces? What records? Will this produce some classic records? We'll see. I can see Cardi in the studio as we speak. But again, I just don't want to hear about this idea that they like each other. That's over with. I don't want to hear about that anymore because they don't like each other. And that's okay. That's fine. It was a rough weekend for another queen, the queen of tennis, Serena Williams, who not only lost to an up-and-coming 20-year-old who just flat out outplayed her, but was embarrassed in her own right in regards to how what transpired at the U.S. Open, a place that has been, you know, that's kind of been, not, I'm not going to say a house of horrors for Serena, but she's had a couple of rough moments at the U.S. Open, to say the least. Ironically, you know, it was her very first Grand Slam back in 1999 that she won in the U.S. Open. In 99, very first Grand Slam. But 2009, you had the situation with the umpire, with the umpire, and that got ugly fast. This one was not as bad to me, but this one I kind of understood where she was coming from. Here's the thing. So number one, she was going to lose the match. There was no two ways about it. The girl was just flat out. She's younger. Serena, the thing, the quiet is kept. And this is the thing that was not talked about. Serena is not that player anymore. And she's 37 years old. She's a mother now. She is no longer that dominant force of women's tennis. And that's, you know what, that's fine. She's been dominating the sports for the better part of 15 years. At some point, she was no longer going to be, you know, just this, you know, she's an iconic figure, but she was no longer going to just dominate the sport at the levels that she had been dominating. And that just, nothing lasts forever. That just wasn't going to happen. Tennis, for the most part, is a young person's sport. Now, you know, what's been going on with the men's has been just something that you just don't see and hadn't seen in the history of tennis, as far as having three guys over the age of 30 dominate the sport at the level that they're dominating. I'm talking Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal in terms of what they're doing. And now Serena at 37, now she's come back down to earth, and she's going to continue to come back down to earth because she's 37 years old. This does not last forever. But the bottom line is, and the reason why you said saw Serena snap is the lack of respect that she gets for basically carrying both men's and women's tennis for over a decade is comical. And at a certain point, you know, she's thinking to herself, I've carried both sports. I get tested more than any other tennis player in the world in terms of drug tested. And now you're going to accuse me of cheating? You're going to accuse me of cheating? Or you're going to say that I need coaching to win? That's what this was all about. This is all about respect or lack thereof. First of all, I couldn't tell whether she was receiving coaching or not. I'm sorry. A thumbs up is, I don't... What if that was a signal? What does that signal? Thumbs up. What would that signal? You know, take some miles off your first serve. I don't understand how could that possibly help her? The second part of it is, I don't see nothing wrong with coaching. I don't see how that, you know, that's where tennis just does not get it. This is why tennis is going to waste one of the great eras of talent in the history of their sport. They're going to waste it. They're going to waste having, in essence, four of the top maybe 20 players of all time between Serena, Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. Four of the top 15 to 20 players in the history of the sport. They're going to waste that because they just don't get it. They don't get it. They have these dumb rankings. There's no off-season. For the most part, tennis just does not get it at all. And not to allow coaching is insane. It just makes no sense. It makes zero sense. But I didn't see myself, and I watched it. I was watching the match, DVR it. I didn't see where she received coaching or where she could even see the coaching that she allegedly received. So I can understand if I'm Serena Williams. Again, I've been carrying your sport, this sport, male and female, for the better part of 10 to 15 years. No one cares. No casual sports fan cares about Roger Federer on Rafael Nadal or Novak Djokovic. They just don't. The casual sports fan cares about Serena Williams. When Venus was good, they cared about Venus Williams. But for the better part of a decade, the casual Serena Williams has carried the sport of tennis. So I can understand why she feels that, you know, why she would have the reaction that she had. I actually felt bad for the girl, Osaka, if I'm pronouncing her last name right, probably butchering her last name. I actually felt bad for her. That was an impossible spot. Her first major. You got the crowd booing, not booing her, but booing obviously the chair umpire and booing the entire situation. And she, you know, the girl at 20 years old, that is a, you know, that's supposed to be the highlight of your professional tennis career. And, you know, you have to deal with that, which is unfortunate. And she handled it as classy as you could possibly handle it. And Serena handled it with class during the trophy presentation ceremonies. But again, the sport of tennis just doesn't get it. Does not get it at all. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate because it is a beautiful sport. It's a great sport. I love when it's played at a high level. I love watching tennis. So you had that. As far as the men's goes, things opened up perfectly for Djokovic, Federer losing their fourth round, and Nadal having to retire on a Friday. Nadal having to retire on that Friday against Del Potro. There was no way that Del Potro was going to beat Djokovic. Djokovic now has returned back to where he was at before the before he had some of the wrist issues and injuries. He's back at the top of his game. 14 majors and counting, and I'm telling you right now, the run that he's had since 2011, where he has won just a ridiculous amount of majors. He's won, I think, 13 majors since 2011. It's really remarkable over the past 7 years, and he's done it again. He's done it. He's won all these majors in the Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal era, when those two were basically at the top of their games. He's had to deal with both the two greatest tennis players in the history of the sport, in Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. I can make a case that is as impressive as Federer's 20 majors or as Nadal's 17 majors. I can really make that case. Because when they were dealing with Djokovic, Federer and Nadal only had to deal with each other. There was no third person that they had to deal with. Djokovic was still young, still didn't know how to win early on in the early 2000s. But Djokovic has had to deal with Federer and Nadal for the better part of his career, and he has 14 majors. So you had that going on with the tennis. As far as the college football goes, shifting it back to the football, that was a good Clemson, Texas. The Clemson, Texas A&M game was a good game. I thought we know Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher is going to have that program rolling in a couple of years. He's going to get the recruiting classes. These are nice players right now for the most part. It's his first recruiting classes. Once he gets that second and third recruiting class, he will have Texas A&M competing for national championships. They're not quite there yet, but they have a endless wealth of resources, you know, a crazy fan base. They're going to give him, you know, they've paid him $75 million. So he's going to have everything he needs to return that program to being close to being one of the top programs in the country. They had Clemson on the ropes for the most part. I'm not sure. The Clemson quarterback situation is interesting because I actually think that Trevor Lawrence is probably the better pure passer, but I think Bryant is more. Bryant gives them that intangible in terms of, the Deshaun Watson like in terms of his running. I don't that, now that's that is a legit quarterback quandary. Alabama, I don't know why Jalen. Well, Jalen, I mean Alabama. I understand why Jalen Hurts played in this particular game. Alabama, won 57-7. So I have no problem with Jalen Hurts playing. There's no quarterback. There shouldn't be any quarterback controversy with Alabama. There might be a legit quarterback controversy with Clemson. Now, again, I think Trevor Lawrence is a better pure passer, but I think Bryant is again a superior athlete as well as the team. He energizes the team with his play and with his athleticism and with his movement outside of pocket. In terms of pro prospect, I think Lawrence is a better pro prospect. But in college, you can come up with these run pass options. You can come up with these gimmicky offenses that can succeed, that end up succeeding for the most part. So they'll be interesting to see what Clemson comes up with, what Clemson does in terms of that. Herm Edwards, Arizona State, gets a big win over Michigan State. Always be worrisome of teams traveling west, playing those late Saturday night games for years. Remember when Arizona State took out number one Nebraska, back in '96. So that's always a dangerous game for those for East Coast Midwestern teams going west and taking on these West Coast teams. So we'll see what happens. See if Arizona State can build off that. Other than that, it was nothing really to come out of the college football weekend. For the most part, Georgia manhandled South Carolina as expected. So, the four best teams in the country are Alabama, Clemson, Georgia. The three best teams in the country: Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia, and Ohio State. Those are the four best teams in the country. Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, and Ohio State are clearly the four best teams in the country right now. But again, still early on in the college football season. So you had last night, you had the season finale of Power for season five. And it was what, 75 minutes? 75 minutes in real time, basically an hour, basically, yeah, 75 minutes long, 70 minutes long. Thinking about season six, and I'm all, watching these season finales, I'm always thinking about what lies ahead. First of all, this episode was not as good as the previous two episodes. It was not as good as the episode where Tommy kills Teresi, not as good as where the episode where 50 Cent dies in 508. It wasn't good as 509 or 508. That's number one. This was a classic case of cliffhanger. We're not gonna kill Angela, we're gonna shoot Angela. We're gonna turn for once and for all, turn Tommy and Ghost against each other. It will be Ghost versus Tommy season six. Along with the side, along with some of the side storylines with Rashard Tate, Tyreek, and some other storylines that they will come up with. But to me, it was a shock value episode. The biggest problem I had with the episode, and I thought the Angela would die myself. I made that prediction, so I wasn't. I thought Tommy would shoot the Angela. I predicted that, last week after watching, I predicted that after watching last week's episode going to the finale. Now, thankfully, I didn't see the leak that had Angela, that had Tommy shooting at Ghost and end up hitting Angela. That leaked out this past in the last couple of days, leaked out earlier last week in the middle of the week. Luckily, didn't see that. But here's what you have to do if you're Courtney Kemp. Number one, you have to kill Dre. That's number one. Again, keeping Dre, I don't understand how it benefits the show to keep Dre alive. Dre First of all, I've never seen a character on the show dodge so many near-death experiences outside of 50 with being burnt up and stabbed and then surviving. But for Dre to survive about 20 different bullets and about 6 different people shoot at him, it's not believable, number one. It's not believable. The whole idea of wanting to keep him alive. Now he's with the government and he's going to be in WITSAC. He's going to be under witness protection program. So what, like, I don't understand. I don't get the Dre narrative moving into next season. I really don't. He doesn't have, he has no power as far as on the streets. He's not in the clubs anymore. He's not running the clubs anymore. So what is Dre's purpose for season 6, to be honest with you, outside of being a snitch? There's no definitive narrative for Dre moving into season 6. So I don't understand why the need for Courtney Kemp to want to keep his character alive. I don't. So that's the biggest problem I had with the episode, is forcing that narrative into next season. I feel like I know what they're going to do with the Maria Suarez, knowing ghosts, and I feel like she's probably connected in terms of knowing some people. So that'd be another something else for ghosts to deal with, I guess. I'm trying to figure out how she was utilized this season. So she appears in the season finale last year. Okay. She appears in one other episode this season, and now she appears in this season finale. I'm trying to figure out how they're using her. Again, I just feel like, and I said this in previous podcasts, I feel like Courtney Kemp wanted to end the series this season, in season 5. I really don't feel like Courtney Kemp wanted to do a season 6. Now, again, I've read some stuff. I know Courtney Kemp says she's trying, you know, paint season 6 as just the greatest thing ever. She mentioned how tough this season was to write, with dealing with the reign of death and with everything that was going on, and, you know, 50 Cent being his last season. So she said that this was a tough season to write, and that next season will be more pleasant, and people will enjoy next season more. Whatever. I get a sense that Courtney Kemp did not want to do a season 6, and wanted to really end it with season 5. That's my personal opinion. And she kind of, you know, her and the rest of the writers kind of got caught up, you know, we're in a catch 22 with how to end this season going into season 6. So I think that, you know, they're already promoting season 6. They're going to have something on September 30th going behind the scenes of season 6. Production for season 6 is going to start next Monday, September 17th. You're going to have 50 Cent directing some episodes in season 6. You're going to have Gary Lennon as a co-showrunner along with Courtney Kemp for season 6. Gary Lennon, of course, wrote and directed episode with, what was the episode called? The last episode, the penultimate episode where Tommy, you know, kills Teresi. I forgot what the episode, A Snitch Among Us, that was the name of it. There's A Snitch Among Us. So he will be a co-showrunner for next season. But again, season 6 absolutely should be the last season of the show. It, without question, it should be the last season of the show. Overall, if I were to grade this season, I'd give it a B. I'd give it a solid B because episodes 505, after Ghost was all drunk and what have you, episodes 6 through 9 were strong. Those are 4 strong episodes. Episodes 8 and 9 were classic episodes, were classics in terms of power classics. I understand that the first 5 episodes, they were dealing with the grief, and I get that. Storytelling was a little bit slow. Things moved a little bit slower, so I get that standpoint. I get that. But season finale kind of let me down a little bit. I was expecting a little bit more from the season finale. So I was kind of let down a little bit by the season finale, especially considering that it was going to be for 75, for, you know, the extra for 75, 70 to 75 minutes. So we'll see what season 6 looks like moving forward. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Surreal Gerald Quinn. You will again catch this episode on YouTube Live in the next 20 or 30 minutes. And it will also be on Blog Talk Radio next tomorrow, early morning. That's going to wrap it up. As always, Real Deal Podcast with the podcast with no apology, telling it like it is with no apologies. Have a great evening.